Hi, this is Remy from At the Movies with Iconic Sounds, and you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM here in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. Montreal's municipal government is scrapping the popular Welcome Box for Babies program. This was a program that gave away boxes of free diapers, plush toys, and other locally made supplies to parents of newborns. The program has existed since January of 2024 and has distributed roughly 20,000 boxes to parents. The city is scrapping the program to cut back in its new budget. Here is Mayor Soraya Martinez-Ferrada speaking at the budget announcement press conference earlier this month.
As you know, the credit card of the city was maxed out.
The Baby Box program had contracts with seven local businesses around Montreal who supplied baby products. These contracts totaled at $6.5 million over a three-year period. Businesses like Beke Bobo, which supplied, among other things for the boxes, heating and cooling packs for infants' wounds, said they could lose nearly $100,000 if their contract is canceled and may have to cut back on staff. Shannon Hebeltwee is a researcher who studies family relations. She recently published a study through Concordia on the social and economic challenges facing new mothers and how an ever-changing and stressful world can isolate mothers. She says this kind of austerity around parenting is part of a trend.
We've been dealing with and talking about austerity for 30 years. You know, it's not new. It's not all of a sudden we're in a situation where we need to, you know, shrink budgets and things like that. Like, this has been an ongoing issue. It's definitely a classic example of that offloading of responsibility from the governments, from state and from governmental policies to this expectation of unpaid informal care that is expected to happen.
Hebeltwee says the boxes did more than just provide materials. They also taught new parents about what businesses were available around them, helping connect them to their communities and break out of the isolation that mothers in particular can sometimes experience, according to her research.
There are some things in there that may seem small and insignificant in terms of cost or impact or whatever. If you're thinking of a small stuffed animal for the child, you know, we think, oh, no big deal. But what we've also lost in that process is a chance to really help to connect these mothers to their community.
For CJLO News, I'm Adam Innes.
Whenever I fall, telling your brother, they say you're gone. You've been tripping around uptown, wooing some fancy clown, keeping up confusion. That's no solution.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, people of Montreal and outside of Montreal. Y'all already know what it is. It's 9 a.m. You're on CJLO 1690. It's definitely mid-range, and I'm your host, none other than Libasico Ela Diallo. I did change up the music today because I promised one of my roommates that moved away made me like a little personal mixtape. You feel me? A little personal playlist, and I promised him that I would play one of his songs or one of the songs that he recommended on the show, and now this thing done. I hope you're happy, Nick. But yeah, welcome back. Happy Monday. It is cold outside. It was crazy to just like get here today. I don't even know how I got here, bro. I almost didn't wake up. I ain't gonna lie to y'all. My class was canceled. I had a class today. My class was canceled. It's so crazy out there. But yeah, we got a really good episode on our hands today. I know that was a really early water break. But yeah, really good episode. What I got for y'all today, I'm going to go through the player of the week, of course. Then I want to talk about this year's draft class because it's been so impressive. It's probably one of the most impressive draft classes that I've seen in my 10, 11 years following the NBA. And then on the back end of the show, we will have a very special guest, none other than Mr. RJ Akan, who is a licensed physical therapist studying out in Atlanta, Georgia, who will come on the show to talk about NBA injuries, modern medicine, and give us some tips on how to recover better. Because I know y'all be struggling. I know y'all don't be stretching. I know y'all don't be taking care of your body. You don't got to be an NBA star to take care of your body. But yeah, yes, sir. But before we get into all that, on a more serious note, I kind of have been thinking about this for the past couple of weeks, like 2 weeks, and especially like harder this week. I thought it would sound kind of tone deaf if I didn't just kind of acknowledge what was happening in the United States right now. Obviously, I'm not here to, you know, to talk about it for the whole episode. I don't want to give lessons to anybody. I just, you know, we with Max cover the NBA, which is an American league. Basketball is a predominantly American sport. I'm gonna have literally an American guest on. I want to acknowledge the murder of Alex Pretty, but also Renee Good and every other person that has been detained by ICE, put in cage. It's been really scary to see, really sad to see. I have a lot of family, a lot of people that I know out in the U.S., and I'm not only scared for them, I'm scared for their neighborhoods, for their community. So I just wanted to touch on that really quickly. Then we'll get back to the episode. But yeah, it's been tragic. It's been really troubling, and I hope things aren't going to change. But shout out Minnesota, people in freezing weather out there protesting. I'm also happy that the sport that we cover, the NBA, as far as big corporations go, big old leagues go, they have done kind of, you know, their part. I know it's pushed by players, right? Like I know CJ McCollum, who is or was the president of basketball, the NBA's player association. I know they pushed for the game to be postponed. If you didn't know, Minnesota versus the Warriors was supposed to take place on Saturday, and then it got postponed to Sunday. And then obviously the Timberwolves player didn't have, you know, in them, like, it wasn't time to play basketball. It wasn't time to talk about basketball. So it was good to see the league react, and especially its players, because I know they're the ones sparking the movement. We're going to get on with the episode, no worries. But I just wanted to have a quick word on that. All right. Now, let's get back to dampen the mood. I just had to get it off my heart. But yeah, the player of the week that I wanted to highlight today was Peyton Watson, who has been incredible. I feel like every player of the week that I'm going to highlight is gonna be incredible. This is a jump that I didn't see coming, right? Peyton Watson could barely get on the court a couple seasons back. They drafted him out of UCLA, and he was definitely, like, he was showing good things, bro. Like, he was defensively, he was able to switch on to smaller guards. He's also able to guard at the rim, right? Like, not a lot of people see that, but he's also able to guard at the rim. And he averaged 3 points in college. And over the last month, he's been averaging 20 points, 5 rebounds, three stalks on 52% from the field and 44% from three. And I wasn't even going to talk about Peyton Watson, but the Wizards played the Nuggets twice in the same week, bro. Twice in the same week. So the first game, I think it was chill. I think he had like a 20-piece, like not an efficient 20-piece by any mean. But then he came to D.C., and Peyton Watson came to play. He had like 35 points, double-double, 4 blocks. He had a crazy block on Alex Sarr, bro. Like, shout-out to Alex. Like, that's my dog for real, but golly, it's one of those plays that, you know, that'll get you out of your seat and be like, ah, damn, you know. But he's honestly, like, really taking the leap. I've been super impressed with his three-level scoring, and it's been interesting because I've watched Peyton Watson be kind of a, you know, a spot up corner shooter and not really do anything outside of that, right? Because most likely they were predicting him to be a 3-and-D player. But, you know, the injuries to freaking Jamal Murray, Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic kind of made it like, oh, you're the only one that can, that has the size and the ability to go get a bucket, so go get a bucket. And what I've loved is that not only they trusted him for that period of time and he was hooping, I think, well, he won Player of the Week out in the West, by the way, in the freaking West, if that, you know, tells you something. And then Jamal Murray's come back, Aaron Gordon has come back, Jokic is on his way back. But the games that I've seen with, so their full lineup without Cam Johnson and Jokic, which Cam Johnson isn't a number one option by any mean, but David Alleman has still trusted Peyton Watson to run his offense, right? Like, Peyton Watson was running 1B offense next to Jamal Murray. Like, they were running plays for him. He was shooting pull-up mid-ranges. Like, it was impressive. And then that brings me to another discussion, because now on the year, he's averaging 15 points, 5 rebounds, sorry. He's shooting 42% from three. He's almost averaging 3 stocks a game. He's giving you really good offense, and he's also giving you stellar defense. So now the real question comes to his offseason projection, because what he's going to be a free agent, right, this summer. And what is going to be Peyton Watson's market? The market fluctuates, bro. They be saying that there ain't no more middle players, right? It's either you're getting the minimum or you're getting a max, or you're getting, like, you know, upwards of $20 million. And I definitely think that his projection, he'll be awaiting, like, a $20 million a year type of bag. Because if Cam Thomas or Kuminga was demanding $30 million, right, what kind of market is that going to be for Peyton Watson, who's probably, he's way more well-rounded than both of these dudes combined, bro. He's a two-way player in this league. But that's where I kind of come in, and I'm kind of a negative Nancy on this, where it's like, I don't think the Nuggets should pay Peyton Watson. I think it's good. I think it's impressive what he's been able to do, but I don't know how sustainable that is. Because there's times, like, his handle is really loose, and he is shooting, a ton of pull-up middies, which, you know, isn't, well, we love death of the mid-range here, and what I'm going to say is probably going to be contradicting, but you know that ain't the most reliable shot in the NBA, right? And if I'm the Nuggets, I just want to, disclaimer, I don't want to, you know, I hate when people come into my fan base and tell me how to do things, and I'm not telling the Nuggets how to do things or how to feel about a certain way. If you want to pay Peyton Watson, go ahead. But in my opinion, I would sign and trade him because there's teams that have cap space. The Washington Wizards, he's been linked to the Wizards. Maybe I'm just biased. Maybe I'm just trying to brainwash y'all into giving, like, you know, him coming to D.C. No, but he's definitely going to be demanding a certain amount of bag, and the Nuggets won't have the cap space. I mean, Jokic is getting a max. You got Jamal getting a max. Aaron Gordon is close to a max. I know he's making almost 30 million. No, something like that, you know. You're going to have to pay Cam Johnson, you know. So I don't know if Peyton Watson can fit into the equation. But we'll see. But in my opinion, I think everything they should either sign and trade, because letting him just go in free agency just won't do you any good, because you're not getting anything back. Also, before we head to our first ad break, I have to mention that the Toronto Raptors beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. Max was blowing up my phone this morning, telling me all about it. I saw that it was like the first time that the Thunder lose back-to-back games at home since 2023. Like, damn, they've been dominant. But I mean, I don't know if y'all been paying attention for the last week, but that's back-to-back super clutch blocks by Scottie Barnes. I have been tasked to inform y'all that Scottie B is the real deal, and that Scottie B should be the Defensive Player of the Year. Not my opinion. I think he should be top 3, maybe top, you know, 5. But I am only spreading the good word of my brother Maximilian, who I am missing so dearly. And with all that talking, that'll take us to our first ad break. When we come back, we'll get into this year's draft class. You know, take a beat, drink some water. I know I am. And come back. Come back to me. Come back to me. I'll see you soon.
Check out Jay Nice and Lady Oracle in the Limelight every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for underground hip-hop and R&B right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
Welcome back. Welcome back, welcome back. A little shorter ad break today. Just wanted to get into more stuff with y'all. You are still on CJLO 1690, and this is still Death for the Mid-Range. And I'm still Libasico and Ajello. But let's get into it, man. I really wanted to talk about this because I feel like it's been a constant reminder, either on social media, either in the articles I've been reading or in the games that I've seen. And I was going to parlay that into saying, like, I've been kind of busy the past couple of weeks, so I haven't watched as much of the NBA as I would have liked. But the one thing I can't miss is the Wizards, right? And I also get a lot of my information from other teams or slash other players from the teams that we do face. So, you know, we played the Kings not a long time ago, and I got to get a good look at Maxime Renault, who I thought was very impressive. Also got a look at Nick Clifford, right? We had a couple, like, back-to-back games against the Grizzlies, and I got to see Cedric Coward. And so I've got to see a lot of these dudes, right? And it's funny because I think it's as advertised. Right, people were saying that this was one of the best draft classes in a really long time. It's definitely one of the best I've seen. I don't know if I'm biased because I've never watched this much basketball in a season, but on this list, there's like 15 to 25 dudes who are either starting, like coming off the bench, or are actually like rotational pieces, right? Because on the back end of it all, you have you know, the big dogs. Cooper Flagg, Con Canupo, VJ Edgecombe, Trey Johnson, Ace Bailey, all these dudes that are starting slash playing major roles. And then, you know, you have your back end. But like, even if I talk about a dude like Noah Penda, right? Noah Penda, who was drafted by the Magic at the end of the first round, has been really good for them. When he's finding minutes with this team, bro, he's been a really nice acquisition. Just a big body who can defend basically 1-5, well, maybe 1-4. Let me not get ahead of myself. Grabs rebounds, can shoot the ball a little bit, and then can finish in traffic. But all those like little things is super valuable. And I can even parlay that into Hugo Gonzalez. Sorry, my Spanish roots are coming back out. I ain't even Spanish. But Hugo Gonzalez, who was, people didn't know where to put him in last year's draft, and I think he was, what, 20? Like, he might have been a second-round pick, bro. I ain't even kidding. But, like, he's come in, and he has given Missoula a really reliable option. And that's very rare for an international prospect who wasn't a star on his team. You know what I'm talking about? Like, he wasn't a star in Real Madrid, and now he's coming in, and he's able to produce right away. So I've been overly impressed. I am gonna go through some of the dudes that I've been most impressed by, and then I'll get to talk about them a little bit. You know what? I'll just get it out of the way. I'll start with Trey Johnson because obviously he plays for my Washington Wizards, and I am beyond impressed by him because. Well, one, I'll give you some numbers, right? He's averaging 13 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists on 45% from the field, 40% from 3, 90% from the free throw line. Out of all these numbers that I just said, what did you hear, bro? It's a near 50, 40, 90. And guess what? he's not the only player doing this in his class. The next dude I'm about to talk about is doing the same thing, bro. Trey Johnson started the season coming off the bench. He struggled at the beginning because he was asked to do, we were putting him in dispositions similar to the ones he had at Texas. But college competition and NBA competition is much different. There's a lot more seven-footers. There's also just a lot more organized defenses. So he struggled to be this kind of like, go get your own shot or go create a shot type of guy. But the one thing that has been true all season long has been his catch and shoot. Like, coming off of pin downs, dribble pull-ups, he's shooting the same or like very similar percentages on pull-up three-pointers and catch and shoot three-pointers. I don't know if y'all realize how impressive that is. He's also just a rookie. Bro, I checked. I think he's 06. I'm getting old, man. I'm getting old. But basically, he hasn't hit that rookie wall because kind of like our rookies last year, Keyshawn George, Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, I feel like it's just an ascension, right? He wasn't, like, there was games where he wasn't coming back in. I know he was on a minute restriction, a mysterious one. Like, they weren't talking about it, but he was on it. And then he was injured, and then he came back, right? And he started playing better and better. And ever since the trade and CJ McCollum going to Atlanta, he's been starting. And, bro, he's been hooping. Like, he just had 26 against the Hornets on Saturday. He shot 8 for 22, though. Even though, because he shot 14 threes, whatever. But it's just the way he's able to get his shot off, the confidence that he plays with, it's unconscious. And I think that goes, that kind of carries over for every dude I'm about to talk about today. All of their confidence is, like, just unconscious. I feel like this rookie class just has an aura about them. He's been also able to flash some playmaking. I don't think that's the one thing that people won't talk about with Trey Johnson. Usually you won't talk about his playmaking, but I'm telling you, there's some pick and rolls with Alex Saar. He's diming. He'll see a cutter, dime. And I think the last thing I'll say about him as well is that obviously he's probably the one I'll talk I can most confidently talk about because I've literally watched all of his games. It's the there's something about him. He's he gets frustrated when he misses a pass. He gets mad when he dishes it to Alex Saar and he doesn't dunk it, you know? There was a super funny clip. I feel like there's way more mics in NBA arenas nowadays because against the Hornets on Saturday, they run a pick and roll with Alex and he throws a really nice like slip pass. Alex goes to the basket and he just kinda like softly lays it in, and then you hear like Trey Johnson just screaming like, "F man, you gotta dunk that ish, huh?" And just that, like, he's 18, 19, and he's really acting like a leader. Like, he's talking. I see in timeouts, he's talking to Alex. He's hyping up his teammates. He gets frustrated when he misses a play. He takes accountability when he misses a rotation. So it's like all these little things, body language and whatnot that I see out of him is amazing. And I'm not gonna lie. Like, yes, my Wizards are the worst team in the NBA by the numbers right now. But I've been really impressed by this team. Really, really impressed. And I'm so excited for Trey Johnson to be a Wizard for the next 10, 15, 20, 35 years, for all I care. Next dude I want to talk about is also a Mr. 50-40-90. But him, even more impressive, because he's averaging 19 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists on 48-42-90. It's, of course, none other than Con Kanepo. Really nice name. But, I mean, we've talked about him on the show already. What to say? I feel like he's the great equalizer on this Hornets team. I've been listening to their Locked On Hornets podcast, and they were talking about their chances of making the playoffs / making the play-in. And then if they play 500 basketball, based on last year's standing, they would barely miss the play-in. So I think they have to start playing a bit better than 500, but they have with their core of in their last 9 games when Con Kanepo, LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Musa Diabate, and Miles Bridges played, they're 8-9. And they've been hooping. They don't play much defense. That's the truth. But this core four with Musa basically grabbing everything that comes off the rim isn't half bad. I enjoy Khan's fit within that core. I feel like, you know, LaMelo Ball is really up and down, and I don't want to feed into the hate that he's just a show off or that he's just a highlight guy, because if you know a little bit about basketball, you understand the impact that LaMelo Ball can have on not only a ball club but on a ball game. And when you have, you know, LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller, who are more kind of like, you know, you got LaMelo Ball's crazy shot making and then Brandon Miller using that incredible athleticism, I feel like Khan Kanupo fits right in the middle of them two, where he's basically able to do everything they can do, but maybe in a less flashy manner or whatnot. But his poise, his shooting touch, which was the surefire thing out of college that was going to translate to the NBA, but the playmaking, the ball handling, him being able to run the pick and roll as well, there were moments that we saw it in college, right, in Duke, but it didn't look as smooth as it's looking right now, and also just to be able to do it on that stage is even more impressive. The consistency that he's been able to play with, also, those are not normal numbers for a rookie. It's just not, because there's volume there too. He's like competing for the most made threes in rookie season with Curry, and in his rookie season. So I don't know much more to say. It's going to be a really nice rookie of the year type of race this year, because I think between him and Coop, bro, it's neck and neck, because Coop ain't going to make the playoffs. Like, you know that. And then Khan, they might make the play-in, and he's playing a major role in it, because you know, he's been available. He's played the most out of the core, or maybe him and Miles Bridges. So he's definitely played a really, really big part. And the last thing I'll say about him is also, I feel like his leadership is impressive. The couple press conferences that I've been able to catch from him has been full of, like, self-awareness and accountability, talking about their effort, talking about their defense, and wanting to put things together. I'm really rooting and pulling for Charlotte. If you guys don't know, there's like an unofficial Twitter beef going on between Hornets and Wizards fan bases. Right now, they got it figured out a bit more than us, I guess. But I'm really rooting for them, because I'm a big fan of LaMelo Ball. I'm a huge fan of Musa Diabate. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan, because I feel like if I was in the NBA, I would love to play with a dude like that and as Musa Diabate, because he's one of the premier just offensive rebounder, just such a dog. You watch 3 minutes of Hornets basketball, he's the one that you notice the most. But I really hope they figure it out. Next, we got, talking about him, the main man, the main event, as they call him, Mr. Cooper Flagg, who's averaging 19 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists on 48% from the field, 28% from 3, 80% from the free throw line. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. Obviously, we going to talk about it. We going to talk about it. It's the 28% from 3. But listen, if you know a little bit about, like, draft scouting and everything, the one thing that, like, every expert says is if they have a good free throw percentage, then that means there's always a chance that they turn into a good shooter. 80% is very, 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 very decent. And also, my second point on that is, if Dirk says that the three-point shooting ain't a big deal, then it ain't a big deal. Because I think it was on Prime, he said that he shot like 25% his rookie year on three-pointers. And look what Dirk turned out to be for the Mavericks. So, obviously, no overreaction there. He's been everything as advertised. I want people to take into account the state of this Mavericks team and the kind of pressure that's been put on Cooper Flagg after a rough, like, first 1 or 2 weeks in the NBA. It's safe to say he's figured it out. He's definitely figured it out. Just the way they've entrusted him with the ball, to be the main creator, the main playmaker. I also want to shout out his teammates, like Najee Marshall, PJ Washington. All these dudes came out and be like, look, we need you to shoot more. We need you to be this, that. We need you to be our leader. We need, you know, that's a rookie, man. And I feel like it's really cool to see his teammates kind of respect his game like that and his ability slash potential. It makes me think of like back in 03 when LeBron was drafted and they interviewed like all of his Cavs teammates or future Cavs teammates. They were like, yeah, it's not an 18-year-old that's going to come in and change things. Like, I'm still going to be the dude. And it definitely wasn't as welcoming as the Mavericks have done. But yes, with this team that has dealt with so many injuries, I feel like I haven't heard Derek Lively's name in forever. Gaff was in and out of the rotation. You know, PJ Washington was dealing with stuff. How can I not mention Anthony Davis dealing with a bunch of stuff? It's impressive. I think the apart from the counting stats, right, and the percentages that are still really good for a team that has been struggling, for me the most important thing has been the way the ball has been put in his hands and the fact that he's like top 6 or 7 in clutch scoring. He's a rookie, bro. You look at the top 10, you have dudes like Kay Cunningham, SGA, Anthony Edwards, and then you get a young dude in Coop Flagg who's shooting above 40% in the clutch and who has put up one of the most points. And a clutch game is considered like when the two teams are within 5 and there's like 4 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. And what is gonna come of it is probably a rebuild, right? It's gonna have to be a rebuild for the Dallas Mavericks. They have to start building around Coop way more, because I feel like if you get a good amount of spacing and maybe not a lead guard, but a stabilizing guard, you know, like a Davion Mitchell kind of type guy, maybe Ryan Nembhard will develop to be that, but you have time. You really do have time with Coop. I feel like it's been underrated how good he's been, because he was really, well, I feel like social media acts like that with the NBA, where when he was struggling, that dude was all over my feed. People on my Twitter timeline were like, man, he's a bust. This is what y'all call number one pick, generational. So yeah, when people are struggling, they're being called out on social media. Now he's been quote unquote boring, which is good, because he's been putting performances like crazy. I won't forget that 40 ball against the Jazz. Really impressive. And that rookie of the year battle with Khan, bro, is going to be really interesting. And yeah, bro, the freaking Mavs are super lucky to just have Cooper Flagg fall into their lap. All right, let's take a little water break. Refreshing, very refreshing. All right, stick with me. Next, I got probably, we're still in that top tier echelon of rookies. I'm going to talk about Vijay Ejkom, Mr. Vijay. I love Vijay Ejkom. I am a huge Vijay Ejkom fan. He's averaging 16 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists on 43% from the field, 37% from 3, and 77% from the free throw line. I have a lot to say. I'll just get out of the way. The Sixers have been good. I got to get around to watching them more, but I've seen Embiid be healthy and putting up really good stats. Now, is it still... I did see 58% from the 3... 58% from the three-point line over the last, like, 2 weeks from Joel Embiid. So I don't know if it's just the three ball is falling or he's actually getting his spark back. I'm talking about, you know, getting his body right, being dominant in the paint. So I'll definitely have to check that out. But, yeah, Vijay. Vijay, who was drafted, what, 3rd? Yeah, something like that. We all saw the insane start, right? 30 ball in the Garden. What are y'all talking about? I'm here. I'm D Wade. I'm Butler. What y'all gonna do about it? So a lot of pressure was put on him very early, because that 30 ball was so insane for a debut, for a first game. It was so insane that like a lot was put on him, and then he kind of hit a wall. Like he hit the rookie wall really early. I think by like November or December he wasn't putting up any more good stats. And it's not easy, because kind of like Coop. You come into a situation, well, I feel like it's not like Coop, because Cooper Flagg knew that he was coming into a situation where he was going to be the guy. And Vijay Ejkom was drafted, and because of the roster construction within the Sixers organization, plus their problems with health and dealing with injuries, you know, from George, from Embiid and whatnot. VJ Ejikom has kind of been on the Tyrese Maxey kind of training program, where he's being asked to be, one night he'll be the first option, another night 1-2 punch with Tyrese Maxey, another night go back to being the fourth or fifth option, you know, behind the veterans. And so that's definitely I'm sure that it's not easy for a rookie to just to have to be that way, to have to, you know, kind of adapt on, okay, I got to be more aggressive here. Okay, then now big dogs are coming back. I got to know my role. I got to do this. I got to do that. But now I feel like with everybody healthy, he's just been their second option. And I know he's not averaging as many points as Embiid or Paul George, but he's definitely carrying himself like a second option. Also defensively, wow. That I mean, it was as advertised. He's a dog. He's a dog on defense. There was a super impressive double block against the Pacers, and then he had that crazy, like, he blocks Mikal Bridges, then runs down and just throws a huge dunk in the Madison Square Garden. He's a dog, but that was advertised, right? I love his interview when he was drafted. He's like, man, I lived off a generator. For 7 years, I had no electricity. I lived off a generator. That was hit me right in my soul, bro. I'm almost about to shed a tear, bro. But yeah, he's a. What's nice is that I feel like he's finding his role, and Embiid and George are allowing him to find his role. He's definitely taking the shots. Like even if he'll only score like 10 or 12 or 15 points, he'll take his 10, 12, 15 shots. And to have that confidence, right? To have been through those one highlight moments, to have already hit a quote-unquote rookie wall, and to also have been really clutch, because he's really clutch. He hasn't had the volume, but he's had a lot of clutch shots. Is impressive. Another thing, too, is his shooting, right? The three-point shooting was not supposed to be that good. 37%, ladies and gentlemen, is like 2% above league average. Again, all of these dudes are like 20-something-year-olds. Even some of them are younger than 20. Putting up those stats, right? Having those numbers, like, just like sometimes I just gotta sit with it, bro. Because I'm my expectations for rookies is usually pretty low, because you gotta wait a year or at least half a season before they get settled in or find any type of consistency. With these dudes, it's no, it's a locomotive, bro. They're going 1,000 miles an hour. But yeah, he's out of all the dudes I've talked, right? I've talked about Trey Johnson, Colin Knuppel, Cooper Flagg. He's the only one that is for sure going to play playoff basketball. And he's so confident about his ability. He's so confident every time he step out on the floor. There's a chance he has some really big playoff moments. Next dude I want to talk about is Dylan Harper, who's drafted second by the San Antonio Spurs. The counted stats are 10 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. On 44% from the field, 24% from three, 75% from the free throw line. Again, 24% from three. Concerning, yes, a little bit. But then, you know, he's a rookie. That's what I'm going to use every time there's going to be something a bit negative. He's a rookie, bro. You can't say nothing. He's a rookie. He's a rookie, so don't even worry about it. But no, I think Dylan Harper he started off really well. Right, and even me and Max used to talk about it, but he is one of the most impressive drivers / finishers in the paint that I've seen out of like any rookie guard come in, because it was advertised. They were talking about, I think he shot like almost 80% in the paint in college. I may be guessing, but it was something like that at Rutgers. And the way he's able to drive in the paint with his speed and athleticism and the body control that he has to either absorb contact and finish through it, or like twist his body and like go around defenders to be able to finish, beyond impressive. Like beyond impressive. And right now Dylan Harper is going through that infamous rookie wall, because he started off so well. He was putting up like 17 points a game, like through his first kind of stretch. and he was shooting really, really well. But the problem is that his jump shooting has caught up to him. He wasn't a for sure smooth pull-up shooter ever, right? His form doesn't look bad, but it's not going in. And the problem is it's hard to leverage your amazing driving ability if you're unable to keep people honest from the three-point line. You feel me? It's like it's unable. Like you're unable to just do that. If you can't hit a three, then people are just not going to step up. So I think for him to be able to find his footing within the, the Spurs offense and whatnot, he has to at least knock it down at a league average. I feel like that's always my goal for dudes that want to get in the paint. It's just league average. Keep people honest, right? Keep people honest. And he's been shooting it, which is good. He hasn't shied away from shooting it, which is encouraging. And that means there's been no sign of people telling him not to shoot. But he's a special talent, no doubt about it. And he's already been faced with big games, in the NBA Cup. He played a big role. Another dude that's going to play meaningful, like very, very meaningful playoff basketball very soon. I'm a big fan of Dylan Harper. Big, big, big fan. And that's it. That is going to take us to our last ad break of the day. And then when we come back, I ain't going to lie to y'all. I've been trying to talk to the special guest, Mr. RJ. Brother might still be asleep. That's okay. Hey, sometimes you just got to sleep. You got to sleep through it. So we'll see if he's going to be able to join us. If not, we'll just keep talking, keep vibing, on this beautiful Monday morning. We will keep on talking about this draft class. Don't go nowhere. I will send you now to ad break.
For the best new music from around the globe, with a respectful nod to the musical pioneers of the past and a whole lot more, join me, Danny Payne, on The Pressure Drop every Monday at 5 on CGLO 1690 AM or CGLO.com.
CGLO presents The Big M Show, a series of hour-long theatrical specials featuring all new music from local singer-songwriter extraordinaire Marlena Moore. Over the course of 2026, come on out to Theater VME for dazzling performances, each with their own unique theme, set design, and costumes. The first Big M Show is coming up on January 25th at 7 p.m. So get your tickets now to The Big M Show at mileendimprov.ca.
And we are back. We are back. We are back. Unfortunately, y'all, my special guest, Mr. RJ Akan, will not be joining us today. I think he's sleeping. It was gonna be a phone call. And I talked to him yesterday, and he was supposed to come on, but that's okay, man. It happens. It's kind of funny though. It's actually kind of funny. I even say welcome back. This is still CJLO 1690. Death of Mid-Range is still on. And if you're just joining us now, we're talking about this year's draft class and how impressive they've been. We're going to keep going on with that. You feel me? I had like a whole section that I wanted to get to, and I didn't know if I was going to have enough time, and now I do. I want to talk about the Nets draft class as a whole. If you take it back, what, like 4 or 5 months ago, me and Max bought in. Listen, we bought in. I didn't disagree that it was a crazy decision to keep all 5 draft picks and to then only play 2 and have 3 in the G League and whatnot, and then have Jody Fernandez, the coach, be kind of like half in, half out, taking them out, not giving them reps, whatever. The Nets have lost 13 out of their last 15. They lost by 54 to the Knicks. They lost by like 47 to the Clippers yesterday or some stuff like that. The positive side of all this is that they have been able to slowly bring on a couple rookies. Right, Yegor Jovan, my favorite name to say in the NBA. Yegor Jovan has been starting from the start. They drafted him at 8. A lot of people said it was a reach. he has been good, right? He's been good. It's just that he was advertised, the way I heard about him is that he was advertised as like a baby Luka Doncic, kind of a pick and roll wizard that can get into the paint at will and is developing a pull up three pointer. I haven't seen that at all. He's been playing off ball a lot. There's definitely playmaking flashes that are happening of him being off the ball, because you can still playmake even if you're not ball dominant, you know? And his jumper was one of the biggest questions of, is it going to translate? Is he going to be able to shoot at like, you know, at a regular rate in the NBA? Man, it's been the opposite, bro. All he want to do is shoot threes now. I mean, granted, he's shooting 40%, and he's made like 90 on the year. I seen it on the broadcast the other day. But he's made more three-pointers than two-pointers. And that's never a worry for me. But people have started to compare him to maybe a Klay Thompson kind of trajectory. His jumper looks beautiful, though. Like, actually beautiful. And he competes. He seems like just a real, like, wholesome dude. If you ever listen to his press conferences, like, he like, yeah, like, the brotherhood and BYU, you know, I miss it. I miss my guys. I miss spending time with guys. You know, he's like, here, guys have families. You know, they get off of practice, they go home. I was like, yeah, bro, welcome to the real world, my brother. But yeah, he's the one point I had is that he's almost shooting too many of them. I feel like he's been settling for a lot of threes. I mean, granted, he's shooting 40%, but if his projection is to be a lead guard in this league, then there's definitely going to be some refining done. He makes me think of like Bob Carrington, who is actually, they're very similar. Who's, you know, another very skinny, taller guard who is unable to get in the paint. And he's going to have to put on weight, talk about Yegor Gilman, because every time that I've seen him drive in the paint, he's unable to do a straight line drive due to his physique. But he's still very young. He's like 18, so his body still needs to develop. I'll go quickly through the rest of the draft class. I won't talk about Ben Saraf because he's injured right now and he's barely played NBA minutes. He was in the G League. I know he was hoping in the G League, but he's barely played any NBA minutes. Next is Drake Powell, who's averaging like 6 points. I don't have his stats. Sorry, I didn't write out my notes to this extent, but I know he's averaging around 6 points, and he's had really, really nice flashes of shot creation, I would say, and also just defensive strides. And that was the main selling point out of UNC, right? University of North Carolina. And yeah, he hasn't been scared to step into that role. But him and Yegor have had NBA minutes from the get-go, and him even more than Yegor Gilman. But these next two have kind of, like, they've had to fight their way into the starting lineup, into just rotation minutes as a whole. Because I want to talk about Nolan Traoré and Danny Wolfe. Now, Nolan Traoré has struggled with NBA efficiency. He has just really struggled to... He doesn't struggle to get in the paint, but he struggles to finish in the paint, which is kind of a problem. Because he's a paint touch, like an automatic paint touch. The dude just gets in the paint at will. He's so fast, so quick. And he has a nice knack at, like, he has a knack for getting the ball in the right places. But when he does decide to go up and finish it, he's a nice frame. Like, he's 6'3", you know, but he's still a bit skinny. And I know that in France, he used to get to the rim at will. He used to finish at will. But again, same thing that we said about, Trey Johnson having to deal with more NBA size. Like, it's definitely different. Like, dudes, like, even though there's like, for example, overseas, there's no three stacking rules. Like, there's a lot more 7-footers. There's a lot more athletic 6'10 dudes. Like, and they know how to help. And when you beat your defender, you still got to worry about that big old dude waiting for you at the rim. But I think it's a learning curve. I saw that he had like 21 points the other day. It's definitely going to be a learning curve. But at least Jody Fernandez has been playing him because he works his butt off on defense. And obviously, you can ask anybody, any coach ever. Defense gets you on the floor, bro. It always does. Then Danny Wolfe, who is very interesting. Very interesting. I wasn't the I'm not the highest Danny Wolf believer or whatnot. He's a 6'11", you know, forward slash undersized big, forward slash big, who can handle the ball, can shoot it a little bit, can create, you know. He struggles on the defensive end because he's very slow footed, and he's not strong enough to play out of the post. But his shot has looked really solid, especially this year. In Michigan, it was kind of you know, on and off. But in the NBA, it's kind of materialized, and he has to, right? If he wants to have, again, any leverage at driving the ball and being able to create a play, he has to shoot the ball, and he could become a stretch big. I don't know, but I'm less impressed on the Nets draft class than the rest of these rookies, but you just got to practice patience. That's all you got to do at this point. You just got to practice patience. Next one, I have to talk about him. But before, I got to hit a little water break. I got to talk about him because it's Mr. CMB, Colin Murray-Boyles, who was advertised as the second best defender in this year's draft behind none other than Cooper Flagg. Bro, Colin Murray-Boyles has not been dealt an easy hand. This is for Max as well. Shout out to you, Max. I know you love him. He has not been dealt an easy hand because he didn't play at the beginning of the year. Injuries and also DNPs. And then he kind of got thrown into the fire as the lone center, right? He doesn't really shoot the ball from three. So he really does play like a big, but he's like 6'9". He's a big 6'9". Like 6'9", like he a big dude. And in his first couple games, he was super impressive. So much so that with Jakob Poeltl being out, they just started the dude. Straight up started the dude. And that's good and everything, but Colin Murray-Boyles, I hope he doesn't become their answer at center. I think he could play alongside a center, right? Or he could play as a backup center or something like that. But him as a lone center, I don't think can be sustainable for a long time. But apart from that, just to get back to Colin Murray-Boyles, his ability to always be in the right spot. It's and I'm talking offense and defense. I feel like from the little sample size that I've seen him play, he just makes winning plays, right? And it's on the same scale as I was talking about Moussa Diabaté earlier. It's just dudes, they have a knack for getting the ball, for being there for, like to on the help defense to get a block from the help side or to get a steal from the help side. And on offense, he works really well as a screener, and he will get into the paint and he will fight into the paint. And that physicality as a rookie is impressive, because a lot of these dudes, when they come in young, well, one, their body isn't developed, right? And out of all the dudes I've talked today, Colin Murray-Boyles is the only one that practices NBA physicality, where he comes in and he's like, oh, I can play too. Like, I'm a grown man too. You know what I'm saying? And he's right. He's playing like a grown man. And I know that he's been in the starting lineup ever since. I don't know if Jakob Poeltl has come back, but him and Scotty Barnes as a defensive unit, I don't want to see that. I'm going to stay on the perimeter. I ain't going in there. It's scary in there. And I think it's disciplined defensive player meets great experimental coach, but like Darko will trust the young guys to play. Like, Darko will trust Colin Murray-Boyles to play a lot. And I kind of mess with that. And he's definitely going to be on the all-rookie team just because of the role he's playing. And another dude who will be playing playoff basketball. And that's where I'm more scared of his shortcomings kind of, you know, of showing out, because there's, you know, against a cat, against a couple of these teams that either play really fast or have centers that can, like, kind of stretch out, then his impact might be less felt. And then behind him, who do they have? Nobody right now. Trade deadline's in what? Like 2 weeks? It's still time to make a move, Toronto. Still time to make a move. We coming up on the last 5 minutes. I want to hit just a couple more of these dudes. We'll quickly touch on the Pelicans. Mr. Zero Fears and Derek Queen, I feel like they're a package deal. It's first of all, great game yesterday. I watched Pelicans versus Spurs, an amazing game. Not for Derek Queen, because he had five fouls and Eve Misi just outplayed him. But from the Pelicans as a team, impressive. And I don't even know why they're trying to compete in games or whatnot. It doesn't matter. The season is kind of over for them. Atlanta will get their pick. Atlanta will be choosing in the top three. Hopefully not above the Wizards. But just to get back to these rookies, Derrick Queen was getting DMPs, and we talked about his ascension, right? We talk about him going from DMP to now starter. And even though the on and off numbers, he is like one of the worst plus minuses in the team, they're still rocking with him because the flashes are real. James Borrego has seen his true potential and has empowered him to jumpstart offenses, has empowered him so much so that last night they didn't even start with a traditional point guard. They ran Herbert Jones, Sadiq Bey, Zion Williamson, and Trey Murphy, and then Derrick Queen. And even though he didn't have a good game, that just shows the trust that James Borrego was comfortable given leeway to Derrick Queen in that way. And again, he's one of those players. And like I talked about, I've been talking 45 minutes about these dudes, and I'm mentioning Derrick Queen right now. And I could talk hours on end about Derrick Queen because he is just one of those players that will make you jump out of your seat because he'll throw an insane pass or he will have an impressive finish. And even defensively, it's not looking horrible, right? I ain't going to say he's an intimidator down there, but if he projects to be a center in this league, it's not disgusting. He can get the rebounds, and I've seen him play help defense. It's not horrible. You know, he could have, like, I feel like he just needs to be an okay defender. He doesn't need to be a plus defender, but he needs to be an okay defender. And him next to Zion, I really like that fit. And maybe I need to watch more Pelicans basketball because for the life of me, I can't figure out why they're not winning more games. I know that they've been in a lot of games, but I just feel like Derrick Queen is a for sure lock to become a star, right? If I had to give that award to a lot of dudes, I feel like Khan, you know, Cooper Flagg, VJ Ashcombe, Derrick Queen have the makings of being stars on their teams, maybe even Trey Johnson. So yeah, and to touch on Mr. Zero Fears, and I've been thinking about getting his jersey, by the way. I've been thinking about that because I feel like it's a tough jersey. They call him the walking paint touch. He is so quick, bro. He is so gosh darn quick. It's not even funny. Once he kind of cleans up his shot diet and works on his three-pointer, I think it could get very scary. We'll see what the Pelicans do, right? They have that in-between court. They have those young guys, right? DeQueen, Misi, Fears. Then they kind of have those in-between guys, you know, Trey Murphy and that. And then where does Zion, Jordan Poole kind of fit into that? Are they going to get traded? Are they going to stay? Who knows? Anyway, we've got a minute and a half left. I wanted to shout out, you know, Maxime Renault and Johan Beranger, some of my French guys that have really, 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 really been hooping, and especially Beranger because, well, he wasn't playing any rotation minutes at the beginning of the year, and he's playing for Minnesota. He wasn't playing any rotational minutes, and now because of injuries, he has been inserted into the rotation, and it's been impressive. Because he is built like a stick, bro, but he gets on the offensive boards. And golly, he is athletic. And the thought of Minnesota having two French big men on their team is just makes my heart grow even fonder of them. I appreciate y'all for being with me today. It was a trying episode. Not everything went to plan, but it's always such a blessing to be able to talk about basketball. On next week, I actually have another guest. Mr. Coach Ray, yeah, we'll come on the show and we'll talk about coaching and sports psychology and everything in between, and it should be a grand old time. We'll also have NBA news for you. Don't even worry about that. Yeah, I appreciate y'all. Have an amazing week. Stay safe out there in the snow, and I will see you next week. Peace out.